You're listening to Panel Borders on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Alex Fitch, and this is Resonance's weekly show about the world of comics. This week's show starts a month of shows about the crossover between comics and music, and today I'm talking to Arnie Belstorff about his graphic novel Babies in Black, which retells the tale of Astrid Kircher and Stuart Sutcliffe, otherwise known as the Fifth Beatle, during the band's iconic visit to Hamburg in the early 1960s. Before that, here's a word from our sponsors.
Resonance FM is London's only non-profit community radio art station, who need your donations to help keep the station and podcasts on air. All the program makers and all the engineers all work for free to bring you shows as diverse as The Bike Show, The Free University of the Airways, Hooting Yard, Speakers Resonance Corner. FM accepts donations in the form of cheques, credit and debit cards, bank transfers, PayPal and cash. Go to www.resonancefm.com for more details. We also accept hobnobs and teabags. Your donation means our continued existence.
You published your first graphic novel in 2005. Mm-hmm. You've been contributing to a newspaper, doing a regular strip for that. And this is your second book.
Yeah.
What made you choose the story of Astrid and Stuart to do 200 pages of comic about?
Okay, first, I wanted to do a book about Hamburg in the 60s because I just was interested in that time and I knew the city because, I just spent 10 years in Hamburg, so I would call it my hometown now.
Mm.
And I was interested in the beginning of the youth culture thing in the 60s.
Mm.
So when I found Astrid's photos, her self-portraits and her photographs of the Beatles, I thought, okay, this might be an interesting story because it's right at the beginning of the youth culture and all things 60s, it's a pre-Beatles era, but it's also the beginning of the Beatles and the beginning of this youth big movement, youth culture movement, and of course it's I was interested in the youth or subculture that were around in Hamburg before that time, and it was something new for me to read about Astrid and her friends, that they were interested in French culture and they were they watching French films and listening to jazz and French chansons and everything, and sounds so strange to me because I don't know any 20-year-old person listening to jazz or chansons, I thought that was interesting to go back into that time and this post-war generation in Germany that avoided everything German, of course, and was looking to France. And Astrid was, like the leading figure, I thought, of that small scene in Hamburg.
Well, it is interesting how Europeans at that time seemed to capture British culture better in various media than we did. I mean, thinking of obviously, Astrid's photos, the films of Michael Antonioni, films of even Jean-Luc Godard, because he did movies about the Rolling Stones and so on. Do you think, in a way, that the British were unaware, or perhaps a little bit too over-aware of what we were doing, and it took kind of an international point of view to fully appreciate the minutiae?
Yeah. I think it's really interesting to see that the Beatles had to go to Hamburg and then meet some German art students who were influenced by French culture, and then something new was happening and all got mixed up and something new was there suddenly, and I don't know about British culture at that time, but I think of course the Beatles were influenced by American culture. They copied Buddy Holly and all that, and Astrid wasn't listening to R&B or rock and roll at all. And I think this was also so many new things colliding in Hamburg then.
Do Do you think Astrid is a figure who is appreciated far more in Germany than perhaps she is over here?
Because... No, that's the other way around.
Oh, really?
I would say.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, especially in...
yeah. I mean, I just worry that in Britain she's just seen as a kind of a footnote to the Beatles story rather than the person in her own
She's maybe less than that in Germany because I think here in Britain, of course, people know the Beatles or the career of the Beatles better than we do in Germany. And so I didn't know about Astrid when I was... I just was Googling Hamburg 1960 to find out about Hamburg at that time and just looking for some pictures of the city. And then I found Astrid's photos and I didn't know anything about her.
Okay.
But maybe if I would have been a Beatles fan, maybe I would have known that it was this girl in Hamburg. But there's... Yeah. So Astrid's not... really like a famous person in Germany or Hamburg.
Okay. When it came to depicting Hamburg itself in those days, did Astrid take any landscape photos or did you have to do further research to other people who had depicted the city at that time?
There were only Astrid's photos of the Beatles at the fairground, the Hamburger Dom, but and a few at the River Elbe, Stuart, but the rest of the all Reeperbahn and Große Freiheit, I had to look for lots and lots of photos and material and, that Astrid didn't have, of course. And there are only a few photos from that area and from that time. Especially the Kaiserkeller, I couldn't find any pictures of the Kaiserkeller inside. And I think there's only one photo from the outside with Rory Storm and the Hurricanes.
Okay.
So,
yeah, and I suppose some buildings probably hadn't changed other than the adverts on the outside.
Yeah. But the Reeperbahn changed a lot.
Right.
But there's still the Indra Club, the first club where the Beatles played, the Kaiserkeller, and so these two clubs are still there, but the top tens... I think it's a Pizza Hut now. And the Star Club, the building burned down in the 80s. So, yeah, there are a few places, but I think there's almost, 50% is gone.
Gosh. Yeah. I read that a lot of the book is actually based on conversations that you had with Astrid herself.
Mm-hmm.
How long in total would you say that lasted?
I can't tell in hours. I just was visiting her a few times. We spent a few hours talking, just a few afternoons in the beginning. And then I was working on the storyboard. Then I met her again. But then I maybe just for half a year, I didn't have contact with her. Then was just drawing. So I think it was, maybe just a few afternoons in the beginning. To listen to her and just that we both agreed on the general the mood of everything and what was important for her to know her because I wanted to tell the story from her point of view from her perspective and so just important for me to get a feeling for her person and how she talks and how...
And the story seems to be very much framed in terms of starting just before she first meets Stuart Sutcliffe and ending just after he dies. You didn't have any interest in starting it earlier in her life or finishing it later?
Finishing it later, there was no...
Well, I mean, I know he died, but she went on to photograph Beatles again.
I think this was really a deep cut. Stuart's death was really... I think it was clear to me that the book would end with Stuart's death, of course. Because I couldn't tell a story about how she... coped with the death of Stuart. And her relationship with the Beatles, of course, was something else then, because it's also the point where the Beatles just... Their career was something else. When Stuart died, they just came back to Hamburg to open the Star Club, and then the career was really just something else, and she did the photos for this Hard Day's Night, but I think that was the time when she realized that they were still friends, but they were now a famous band, and she still is a person who doesn't like to be like in the front row public, and so I think that was the point when she decided to not she doesn't want to be the Beatles photographer, so she decided to be just a friend of George. She was close to George Harrison, and so and that's I think her life, of course, went on, and she was still befriended with George and John, but I decided to take to have the focus on her relationship to Stuart, because that was 2 years in her life that changed everything,
And when you started thinking about how you were going to relate that story of those 2 years in her life into a graphic novel, at what point did you know it was going to take 200 pages and that it would be a good idea to break it down into the following sections?
It just happened somehow.
And did you write the full script?
I was working on a storyboard for about 1 year. And during that time, I just tried to divide this whole story into this 6 chapters. But it changed during the following 2 years. I was drawing, and then I rearranged, of course, some things. That was a slow process, I think. Still, the 3 years, still changing things.
And I've not seen any of your other work, but the way that you construct the page in this graphic novel, there seems to be a great formalism to the fact that every page has 3 horizontal strips, some of which...
It's 6 pairs.
There's the some pages you've taken two in a row, but I mean, generally,
there's a strong,
it's 3. And sometimes those are divided up. And sometimes those are solid panels.
I
mean, was that, again, breaking it down into, a novel length format?
I wanted to make it very easy to read and very simple and very reduced and, like Astrid's style was very reduced and simple, and I think it's also when you read a comic book or a graphic novel, you always, as an author, you always try to play with the time, how long it takes to read a page, and I think it helps if you have a strong raster for a page, strong concept for everything. So I think it helps to have the tempo is really it stays the same during the book, and I wanted to have it really a flow, like one flow. You can read the book in one.
Well, and then, of course, when you get used to that kind of rhythm, it's interesting how when you come across a page that is, say, 3 silent images of a landscape, that actually creates a natural pause. And I'm not used to comic book artists referring to the early stages of a graphic novel as storyboards, but it's interesting that you say that, because there are filmic techniques that you use in the book, such as those landscape scenes, which have a certain sedate pace to them, and then it picks up again when the speech balloons return.
Yeah, but that's I think that's the strong point about the medium, of course. You can use these elements to control the time, the make a pause at some point. Mm. Yeah, that's of course similar to yeah, doing a film or something. Mm. Yeah.
The dream sequences where she's mm-hmm. wandering through this stark white wooded area with just mm-hmm. hearing sort of music in the background. Is that based on actually something that she said, or was it your own invention?
It's based, or it refers to her favorite filmmaker from that time, Jean Cocteau.
Right.
Okay. There's one movie, I can't come up with the English name for it now.
One of the Orphée movies?
Yeah. It's Orphée, and it's also Les Enfants Terribles.
Hmm.
There's one scene where the guy dies and the woman walks through the wood.
Okay.
And so there's always the woods, and then there's this mirror. There are several references to Jean Cocteau
mm.
in Astrid's dreams. Yeah, so that was the idea about for using this things.
And also, I suppose, indicative of the kind of French culture that she appreciated at the time.
Yeah. And the book begins with a dream of her in the woods alone, and then as the book the story goes on, suddenly Stuart is in her dreams in the same woods. Mm.
What's the graphic novel scene like in general? In general, because it's interesting that you're also a publisher. Is that because there aren't many outlets for people to create comics, perhaps comics that are less mainstream?
That has changed during the past 5 years, maybe.
Okay.
Because when I published my first book, it was a different scene.
Mm.
We didn't have the term graphic novel then.
Mm.
So I think things have changed a lot during the past years. And when I was in art school, or when I was just starting doing comics this way, it was different, of course. There was no market for books like that. But, well, yeah, now with my second book, it's something else. We have graphic novel departments or sections in the bookstores, and there's a small market, and there are a few people, a few artists in Germany who can make a living out of it, I think.
Great.
Yeah. So, but when I was doing my first book, my diploma, my final thesis in art school, I didn't think that I could do this for the rest of my life. Just like, yeah, I wanted to do this, but I think I was lucky to have, the success with the first book, and then the offer by this newspaper to do an ongoing series of Sunday comics page, and
and that first book, 8, 9, 10, what was it about?
about youth culture as well, but the lack of youth culture maybe, because it's kind of semi-autobiographical book about growing up in the suburbs, being bored, and so it's a book about maybe the 1990s, okay, in rural Germany. So
what does the title refer to?
Oh, that's difficult to explain. The main character in the book, he has to repeat class, the 10th grade.
Okay.
So it's set during the summer vacation. It's one summer, and when the summer's over, he has to repeat the class. So it's like a kind of situation where nothing happens, and he has to, everything's repeating, and the future's totally just...
Okay.
Yeah, nothing to look forward to. And, And there's also this hopscotch game where you have to hop from one number to the other. The 10, I think, is always the last number, and then comes heaven or hell or something. So it's difficult to explain, because there's one scene in the book where he just walks along the pedestrian, and suddenly there's this children's game. and it says heaven or hell. Okay.
And is that something we might see translated into English now that...
I don't know.
Maybe it's in black.
I can't say anything about that. But yeah, hopefully.
Mm. And that course that you studied with the book being the final outcome, it was in design, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And in Germany, it's acceptable, or at least it was acceptable when you were doing it, for comics to be part of a design course, or did you actually have to struggle against what were the perceived, you know?
No, I was, again, lucky to have a professor, Anke Feuchtenberger, who was also a comic artist. And you can do illustration work or just illustrate children's books, and but there were a few people that already did like comics as a diploma. So no, I didn't have to struggle
with okay.
it was, but of course it was a kind of maybe stupid decision to do a 96 pages book if I could have done a 30 pages children's book. So
well, it's a statement of intent.
It's yeah, that is, yeah, that's right.
And your style, it's a very cartoony style, the way that we'd refer to it in Britain. But it's interesting that you capture the likenesses of the characters very well without them being caricatures. You can recognise, you know, who John and Paul and George are. When it came to capturing the likenesses of real people, was that something you found difficult, or did it come naturally to you, having honed a specific style that perhaps people know you for?
I was always avoiding to draw people like the Beatles or other pop stars, or and I was surprised how easy it was to capture them in this way. And I realized that it was really, they all had something about them that was like almost like a caricature, you know, the big ears or the nose, and so, and then suddenly I realized it was really easy to have a reduced form of their so that doesn't, I didn't want it to be that you can say, okay, this is like a realistic portrait of someone, and it's not, and it's also not a caricature of someone, so something in between. And I thought it would be difficult, but in the end it was really easy. I was surprised.
And I suppose the more famous someone is, they will already be rendered.
But I mean, it's the Beatles before they were the
absolutely
Beatles with their mop top and everything, so
the previous one of the previous graphic novels that Self-Made Hero published about a musician was a biography of Johnny Cash, which was also by a German artist.
Mm-hmm.
And when that came out, they were able to integrate the online version of the comic with an ability to download tunes by Johnny Cash on iTunes. Do you know if they have any similar project planned for this?
No.
Or are the rights of the Beatles still so expensive, even though it's on iTunes?
But in fact, there's no Beatles song in the book. It's
what they call it.
No, I don't know about that. I mean, the book's just come out now, and I think maybe they will think about that, but I don't know yet. But I must say, I'm not a big fan of all things digital, and so I like things on paper. And I personally like to read a book with my hands and my eyes, and like to feel things. So, but of course, with music, it's always something else. But but then again, it's a different media to have something with you can listen and see at the same time. It's and I like the lack of sound when you read something,
because you provide the silence, your own soundtrack in your head.
I think it's that I don't hear voices, that you have to make the voices that come up with them in your head.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting to hear you talk about you know, a love of the materiality of it, because even the paper that's been chosen for it, it seems to be very specific. It's quite heavy. It's not quite brilliant white. It's off-white.
Yeah.
Because your art style, it seems to be very much about the simplicity of the line, the way that, for example, this page I've just opened at random, you're depicting Astrid's cigarette smoke, the way that the blush on their cheeks is represented by a simple squiggle. It's all actually very evocative. And sometimes a simple line says an awful lot more than something that's been overly rendered. And I presume that's something that's important to you.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's what I like about drawings in general. Mm. I think I'm, just to agree with you. Yeah.
And, you know, if I was to try and pin down perhaps what makes your style unique, there's a way that you have of shading textures and backgrounds that. This isn't meant as an insult, but the only way I can think of describing it is a scribble.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's loose but very controlled. Yeah. I mean, how often would you have to go over panels in order to feel that, you know, you are happy with their rendering?
Very often.
Right. Okay.
You know, the outline comes first, and then I go over it with this crayon pencil. And of course, you have to be controlled all the time, and it has to look like just scribbling, but it took some, just a few pages maybe, but then I was just I don't think I had to do a page twice. It sounds but it's true. I was working on one page. I did the pencil drawings first, and then I did the ink on the same page, and then I erased the pencil. And the last step was to have this crayon gray shades.
And it looks fantastic. And now that the English translation of this has come out, what can we expect from you next? Is it possible that some of your newspaper cartoons that we've not seen in this country might be translated? New project?
Again, I don't know. I'm still occupied with everything Babies in Black, so I will be traveling through Europe with this book. It comes out in Italy and Spain and France, and I don't think we'll have the time to do another 200 pages graphic novel in the next future, but maybe I will slowly start to think about the next project during this year.
And obviously, you know, your English is very good, but you collaborated with a translator on this version. When it comes to the book being translated into other languages that presumably you don't speak, is that something that worries you, or you just have to put your trust in the people that you're working with?
Worried, of course, but I cannot control this. It's, I mean, the German edition was half English, half German.
Okay.
That's an important thing about the story, because it's about two people who don't speak the same language and are just attracted by each other because of their look.
Okay. So all the English dialogue was in English and all the German dialogue was in German?
Yeah. So the German readers had to understand a lot of English dialogue. It was a bit, risky. Yeah.
I mean,
but
obviously doing the same here, if you were to do that, you'd have to have maybe subtitles on the page.
I don't think anyone could understand the German.
Language. But was there ever a consideration that you might have had a dual language version in this country, but with, say, translation at the bottom?
No.
Okay.
No. I don't think it's okay. It feels more natural, of course, but I'm curious about the Spanish or Italian versions, of course, because then it all gets, you totally get lost in translation.
Yeah.
It's when the Germans speak Italian and the Beatles speak Italian. It's, I don't know how that will work, but yeah. I think it's okay to have the Germans now speak English.
I suppose it's something that we'd be expecting anyway.
Yeah, so. No, but I mean, it's always difficult to have some book translated when the story itself is about different languages and people from different countries are involved.
Babies in Black is available from all good bookshops now, and I'd like to thank the publishers Self-Made Hero for setting up this interview. This Saturday, May the 7th, is Free Comic Book Day around the world. So why not pop along to your local comic book shop and see what free comics they have on offer? Gosh Comics, opposite the British Museum in London, is also doing a signing on Saturday at lunchtime with 2000 AD creators Dan Abnett, Al Ewing and Robbie Morrison from 1pm. And then at 5pm at Orbital Comics on Great Newport Street near Leicester Square, Shaky Kane and David Hine are doing a signing, and there's a screening of a new documentary about Kane by Stephen Cook. Also at Orbital is an exhibition of art by Freak Angels artist Paul Duffield and Spider Moon artist Kate Brown. On next week's show, I'm talking to singer-songwriter V.V. Brown about her serialised graphic novel City of Abacus, along with her co-writer David Elaine, and two of the artists who have illustrated the comic, Leo Connor and John Spelling. Panel Borders was introduced, recorded and edited by Alex Fitch. Previous episodes of the show can be found at www.panelborders.wordpress.com, and we'll be back at the same time next week. Thanks for listening.